Okay, so last week we started the topic of ribis derech mekach, ribis through a transaction, as opposed to ribis through halva, through a loan. There are two different ways in which ribis can take place, basically, when you're dealing with a transaction, with a sale situation. One way is what we call psika al haperos, which is you pay now in order to get goods later. And the idea is that you pay now and lock in a lower price than what the goods will be worth later on. So you, the buyer, are lending to the seller. The seller gets your money for a period of time, pays back more than you lent him by giving you goods at a special rate. That's psika al haperos. That's not our focus. The one that is our focus is the reverse case, what we call tarsha, or tarsha of Nachman, certainly. And that is where you get the goods now, and you're going to pay later, which happens, you know, in most of our large purchases. So, you know, I buy a house, right? I pay whatever it is, 20% up front, and then the rest of it I'm paying over a period of 30 years. I end up paying far more than the amount that I would have paid had it been up front. So what's happening is the lender is loaning me the money for the house, right? I borrow $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, whatever, it depends on what region in Toronto I'm in. But I borrow however many hundreds of thousands of dollars from the lender, and they pay back $1 million over the period of 30 years. So that's, you know, potentially a case of ribis. You get the goods now and you pay later. In that case, assuming there is no third-party mortgager, assuming that it's just a regular purchase, let's say a car dealer, whoever it is, without some third party, they're giving me the car now, they're giving me the house now, and I'm paying them more than it is worth over a period of time. And that's what we talk about in terms of tarsha. And we say that such ribis is fundamentally ribis derabbanan, not de'oraisa. We gave two different reasons for that, either because of various psukim, Rashi and the Chochmas Adam, or alternatively because the ribis in these cases is unclear, and that's really the focus for our tarsha discussion, is that the ribis in such cases is unclear. Because either the ritva's case, well, I'll just take the ritva, because the ribis isn't clear from the start. When I buy the item, it isn't obvious to everybody that I'm going to be paying back more than I am currently borrowing. That was just basic, you know, from our introduction. We then went into the sugya in the Gemara. The whole Gemara that interests us is really the bottom of Samachay Amud Aleph, top line on Samachay Amud Beis. And Rav Nachman had said, Tarsha is fine. Rav Nachman's statement was, Tarsha is okay. And the Gemara challenged Rav Nachman, and his answer was, Tarsha is fine where it is not set. The low cuts, where it's not set. And we explained last week when we dealt with Rav Nachman, I'm really going to focus on Rav Nachman for now, that there were two different approaches to what Rav Nachman means. There's Rashi's approach, which is that approach of most Rishonim, quite frankly, and then there's the approach of the Gaonim quoted by Ramban. And the approach of Rashi is to say, low cuts means you only tell him the late price. You don't tell him the early price. So in other words, I say to Meron, I'm going to sell you a car, and you're going to pay me $30,000 over the course of the next 3 years. Right? That's the way we're going to have our deal. I don't tell him that if you were paying up front, you'd get it for $18,000 now. I just don't say that. So in such a case, it's not clear. Go back to our reason why ribis derech mekach is only a derabanan. It's not obvious to everybody that there's ribis involved. Maybe the early price was also $30,000. How does anybody know? That's one approach. The other approach, the approach of the Gaonim, is to say that it's where the price that's going to be paid is not clear. It might actually change. It's not fixed. So I don't say to him, forget installments, but I say to him, you're going to pay me in 3 years, and you'll pay me whatever the item is worth in 3 years. In this case, cars are not a good example because cars depreciate immediately. But let's say, you're not going to pay me for the house right now. Maybe you give me a down payment. But in 10 years, you're going to pay me whatever the house is worth then. The ribis is unclear because maybe the bubble will burst and the houses will go down in value. That has happened. So you might still ask, well, even if the ribis is unclear, why isn't this still a hot ribis? So the Rashba's explanation is that it's okay because shalot in oldeles, we don't want to create restrictions which are going to prevent commerce. If you're going to tell me that I, as a seller, am never allowed to sell something on credit and take a higher payment later on, that's going to kill the market for large purchases because people don't have that kind of capital. It means that you can only buy a car if you have all the money up front. You can only buy a house if you have all the money up front. How in the world are we going to do business? You can't do it. So that's the Rashba's explanation for why this is okay. The whole thing is a Dirabanan, and they didn't create a Dirabanan for this case. We dealt with other issues in and out, but that's the basic introduction to Rav Nachman. So the question then was, do we paskin like Rav Nachman? Because Rav Nachman in the Gemara was followed by two other forms of Parsha. One was Rav Papa, and one is Rav Chama. We're going to come back to Rav Chama later on. I don't want to start on him right now. But Rav Papa's form of Parsha was unclear. Rav Papa's Parsha was to say, I don't really want to sell my goods right now at all. I'm a beer maker, and my beer isn't going bad anytime soon. So I'm making it now, and I'm going to sell it in a few months from now. Someone comes to Rav Papa and says, I want to buy your beer right now. So Rav Papa says, well, okay, if you want the beer right now, that's fine, but you should know I wasn't planning on selling it, so I'm going to charge you more. That's going to be the result, is I'm going to charge you more for the beer. But I'm doing it as a favor to you. If it were up to me, I wouldn't sell it at all at this point. I would rather hold it until later and sell it later because beer is going to go up in price. That's part of this that I should have mentioned. Beer is going to be worth more later on. I'd rather wait till later. You want me to sell it to you now? Fine, but I'm going to charge you the later rate. So in that case, Rav Papa says, it's not for me. It's not Ribbis. It's a favor I'm doing for the buyer. To which the Gemara says, that's very nice, but from his perspective, it's Ribbis, because he's getting something, right, that's not worth as much as what he's paying for it, and he's going to pay you later at that higher rate. So that's Rav Papa's Tarsha. And then you get Rav Chama, who presents his own Tarsha, black box for right now, and then the Gemara concludes, Rav Chama's Tarsha is okay. So the question is, Rav Chama's Tarsha is okay, and Rav Papa's is no good, and Rav Nachman's is no good? Or, Rav Chama's Tarsha is okay, Rav Papa's Tarsha is no good, and Rav Nachman's is good, and the Gemara just didn't bother to say so. Which way do we look at this? So the truth of the matter is, we saw a separate Gemara which said the Tarsha of Rav Papa is no good. Didn't say anything about Rav Nachman, which maybe makes me think that Rav Nachman is okay. We had proofs to support that idea. But what it really comes down to is the question of whether Rav Papa and Rav Nachman are the same Tarsha or not. I have a whiteboard here. I feel like I should use it. We don't have time. But the question fundamentally is whether Rav Papa and Rav Nachman are both talking about low cuts, the case in which you didn't, according to Rashi, you didn't say what the early bird price would be, or you didn't fix what the end price would be according to the Gaonim. That's the question. Fundamentally, are Rav Papa and Rav Nachman talking about the... Oh, they're on a marker, so I don't feel so bad. Are Rav Papa and Rav Nachman talking about the same thing? If you take the view that the... It's fine. Yeah, if you take the view that Rav Papa and that Rav Papa was saying low cuts, like Rav Nachman, I'm not going to tell you the upfront price. In addition to the fact that I'm doing you a favor, I'm also not going to tell you the upfront price. And we reject Rav Papa, then presumably we reject Rav Nachman also. Because Rav Nachman only had one benefit. Rav Nachman was low cuts. Rav Papa was low cuts. He didn't fix the price. And in addition to that, he did you a favor. Right?
So in Rav Papa's case, as long as he didn't say anything, it's actually the same case.
It's, yes.
So even to that. So can I think that you were saying this question to Rav Papa?
Yeah.
But even if Rav Papa's thing about not getting benefit doesn't work, yeah, he still has all the same reasons from Rav Papa.
Correct. That's exactly the point. Rav Chama, here you have Rav Nachman, Rav Papa, and Rav Chama, right? Rav Nachman has the benefit of low cuts, right? Rav Nachman has the benefit of low cuts. Rav Papa has a question mark under low cuts, but he has another advantage. He has the benefit of saying, it's not for my benefit, it's for your benefit. Right? So Rav Papa had this. And we said Rav Papa's no good. We're not accepting Rav Papa. right? We're only accepting Rukhama. So the question is, I would look at this and say, both Rav Nachman and Rav Papa are saying Lokas. I could look at it that way. If that's true, that both Rav Nachman and Rav Papa are saying Lokas, and yet we reject Rav Papa, then clearly we reject Rav Nachman. Because Rav Nachman only had this one Kula, the Lokas Kula. He didn't even have the I'm helping you Kula. You follow?
Yeah. It depends on how you understand Lokas.
What do you mean?
If Lokas means that you just don't mention the price at the beginning,
yeah,
then that's true in both cases. If Lokas means that the ribbis at the end is unclear, and presumably in Rukhava's case, there was cuts because he told them exactly what.
No, he didn't. That's right. He said, it's going to be whatever the price is here. Yeah. So that's the thing. If you assume that Rukhava means that Rukhava is including Lokas in his, then if you reject Rukhava, you reject him now. However, if you believe that Rav Papa actually is cuts, that he is fixing the price, the only thing he's offering is cuts, it's not to help me, it's to help you. Right? I shouldn't rank my benefit, I should rank your benefit. Right? I'm helping buyer. Then even if I can offer Rav Papa, I can still accept or not. I can say, we didn't like this one, but we like that one. That's the idea. Yeah, keep it. That's the idea. That's the machlokas. And that goes back to what we said in the beginning last week, the question of what is tarsha. The Ramban says the word tarsha, and we have three different explanations for what the word tarsha means. But what the Ramban's view was that the word tarsha means mute. That's what the word actually means. Meaning the ribbis is unspoken. Which means that all three of these people, Rav Nachman, Rav Papa, Rav Kama, who are saying, I have a version of Tarsha, are all talking about cases of Lokas, where you didn't tell him what the ribbis is. Right? Either because you didn't tell him what the upfront price would have been, or because you didn't fix what the endgame price would be. Either way. So according to Ramban, all three of them are saying Lokas, and therefore, when I throw out Rav Papa, I throw out Rav Nachman. That's the way Ramban is going to look at it. He's going to say Rav Nachman is gone. However, the other view of Tarsha is that it just means increase, to go up. That's all it is. It's like when we use the word trashim to refer to ruts. Things are just going up. And they're going up they are all going up, but they're not necessarily low-cuts cases. They're not they're not necessarily all going to be talking about low-cuts. So that's exactly the point. The view of Ramban...
It says that there's a shah at this point or not. At the beginning, where everybody knows what the...
That's going to be part of our discussion in a moment. Oh, we're not there yet. Okay. But it's a good question. So that's the idea. If you believe that Rav Papa's case is Lokas, you did not fix the price. Right? If that's what you believe, that Rav Papa's where you did not fix the price, just like Rav Nachman, then when you throw out Rav Papa, you throw out Rav Nachman. But in the event that you believe that Rav Papa's case is a case in which you fixed the beginning price, you fixed the end price, everybody knew it, your only advantage is saying it's to help the buyer, then throwing out Rav Papa doesn't mean that you throw out Rav Nachman. And so what you end up with is, in fact, Ramban saying, I don't agree with Rav Nachman, and the school of Rashi Tosfos and many other Rishonim is saying we're good with Rav Nachman. That's what you end up with. Stay there? That's all just review from the end of last year. Okay. So what we're up to, if you have the sheets, is source Chaf.
Is this the end of last, right?
No. There's stuff added in the middle, there's stuff added at the end. Only one source is added in the middle, actually. Okay. So, the poskim tend to go with Rashi's definition of low cuts, first of all. Which means that you didn't specify the end the beginning price. That tends to be the way we go. But they're split on whether to accept Rav Nachman. The Rif is quoted as proof against Rav Nachman, but this is one of those problematic cases where people quote the Rif based on their edition of the Rif. Not everybody has the same edition as the same edition of the Rif. We're not actually up to Chaf. Sorry, we're up to Chafei. Chafei is the one you want. So the Rif has the following. It starts with parentheses. That's your problem. Parenthesized text. Remember that the goal of the Rif was to bring you the halachic portions of the Gemara. That's all he wants to discuss. If anything in the Gemara is not paskin lahalacha, it's not making it into his chibur. It's not there. So therefore, we often will try to deduce halacha based on what the Rif chooses to include or chooses to exclude. So here you have a line in parentheses. Does that mean that it was in everybody's edition or not in everybody's edition? What's it doing there? And the parenthesized line is Rav Nachman. Right? Amr of Nachman, Tarshish Shari. Rav Nachman says Tarshish is okay, and then the Rav Chama's challenge to Rav Nachman is all in parentheses. And then it continues, Amr of Papa, Tarshish Didi Shari. Rav Papa says my Tarshish is good, and then it goes on to explain how he's really helping out the buyer and the challenge to him, and then it brings you Rav Chama, and Halacha follows Rav Chama at the end of Source Tavei, the Hilfasak Rav Chama, Velezalid Rav Papa. The law follows Rav Chama, it does not follow Rav Papa. Well, what about Rav Nachman? Is this okay or not? This is huge. From a halachic perspective, everything we do involves Rav Nachman's tarsha. Right? Any time you're paying with installments, a higher price later, or anytime you have a delayed payment and it's going to be a higher price later, you have to know, can I do that or not? Well, it all depends. The school wants to tell me that I can pay tuition for my kids up front now, or I can pay tuition, you know, over time, but I'm going to pay more money if I pay over time. Can the school do that? It's a very practical question here. So the Rif is quoted as proof against Rav Nachman by the Rosh. The Rosh says the Rif omitted Rav Nachman. So he says that shows that he disagrees with Rav Nachman, even though at the end he didn't paskin anything about Rav Nachman. Right? He said Rav Chama yes, Rav Papa no. He means Rav Nachman no also. That's the Rush's statement, that's the Ramban's statement. The Pulach HaRif does a commentary on the Rush. And he said, I'm sorry, but your edition doesn't look like my edition. In Source Chavav, he says, V'sifrei HaRif Shabiyadeinu Isa. He says, in my version of the Rif, Rav Nachman is there. And in fact, V'Hachnami Messiahim, look at the end of the Rif, we saw it, it says, V'Hilchasak Rav Chama, V'Lesa Lidra Rav Papa. We follow Rav Chama, we don't follow Rav Papa. Mashma Demiuk Rav Nachman Hilchasa. It sounds like the law indeed does follow Rav Nachman. You follow?
That's saying that the Republic does not say look us.
So the assumption will have to be that the Republic does not say look us, or to say it differently, Republic says cuts. Right? Let's get rid of our double negatives when we can. The Republic says cuts, that the price indeed is told to them. The only advantage is that it's not for the benefit of the seller, it's for the benefit of the buyer. And therefore I draw Rav Papa, but I keep Rav Nachman. That's what the Papula Harifta would like to do. In our edition, Rav Nachman is in parentheses, and the margin in our standard issue, Vilna Shas, has a note saying that there are manuscripts where it doesn't appear. Thank you very much. I could have told you that. The Rambam says that Rav Nachman's case is Avak Rivis in Source Chav Zayin. If you see the bold part in Source Chav Zayin, V'chein emachar lo metalflin adzman ploni b'meya. If I sell somebody movable items, and I say, you can pay until X date for $100. I didn't tell him the upfront price. V'yushavin b'shuk l'mishakona ma'osav miyad tishin. But the market rate, and here's where we're going to go back to the market rate. The market rate right now is 90. So I am inflating the price for him to pay over time. I just didn't tell him that. Hareza Asur, that is no good for me to do that because he says Rav Nachman's case is in fact a Avak Rivis. Why? So the Magen Mishnah says, because the Rambam always follows the Rif. Not always. The Rambam likes to follow the Rif. Right? Remember, the Rambam is son of the Talmud of the Rif. So he's always going to try to follow the Rif. So he is going with the Rif's omission of Rav Nachman. And the Ramban in the Machamos also is against Rav Nachman, and the Vilna Gaon is against Rav Nachman as well. I read the Vilna Gaon in Source Chavches. He says, "Rifi Shvita." Do you want to come with me? Can't connect.
Maybe to the internet
messed up.
My wireless. Okay.
Okay. So he says the Rif omitted it. He quotes you the Ramban. The law is against Rav Nachman, and he says that's what I think is correct. So you have a pretty formidable school against Rav Nachman.
right? Not liking this idea of delayed payment via installments at a higher price. You have possibly the Rif, you have the Rambam, you have Ramban, and you have Ra. Nonetheless, you have a school in favor. The Rush is good with Rav Nachman. The Baal HaMor, Rav Nachman, is good with Rav Nachman. The Rashba is good with Rav Nachman. That Rashba is what I quoted to you last time when I talked about Shabbos. That's what the Rashba was talking about. He said, it's a Derabbanan. We don't want to keep people from engaging in business. So fine. And most importantly, the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch accept Rav Nachman. I brought it for you in the source of test, and you see the words I bolded. Ubilvad shelo yomar lo befeirush. As long as you don't say it explicitly, we're good. That's the tour in Kufayin Gimel. It's also in the Shulchan Aruch in Yeredeya Kufayin Gimel, Aleph and Beis. I didn't bring it here on the sheet because it's basically redundant once you've seen the tour. But the same message that we are okay with Rav Nachman's approach. Side note. I'm not going into this in depth, but the Magid Mishnah comments here, I brought it for you in Source Lamed, V'yeirodim ha-shakasav Rabbeinu metaltalin. If you look at the Rambam's language, the part that I bolded in Chavzayin, he said, V'cheinim machar lo metaltalin, if you sell movable items. So the Magid Mishnah says, what about land? Why did you specify movable items? Where did you get that from? So he says, in the fact that the Rambam wrote metaltalin, she'ein adin kein bekarka. That must mean that karka would be different. Lefi she'ein lomar she'iyah kayotze bo nimkar b'shuk v'yarib is nikar bo. He says, why? Because each parcel of land is different. Right? You're in real estate. Each parcel of land is different. Even if they tell you that there's a comparable, right? Here's a house with 3 bedrooms, here's a house with 3 bedrooms. This one has 1 garage, this one has 1 garage. This one has a postage-sized lawn, and this one has a postage-sized lawn. Nonetheless, this one is closer to the bus stop, this one is in the right school district, this one has bad neighbors, whatever it is, each one is unique, and therefore you don't necessarily have any known price at all to work from. And here he brings in something we saw months ago, ain ona v'karkos. There's no ona for land, and one of the reasons suggested for why there's no ona for land is because there is no set price. It's not like you have a known price. So the Magid Mishnah quotes the idea that we may actually have a different psak when it comes to land as opposed to movables. Maybe for movables, even saying, well, I'm not telling you the upfront price doesn't work, because everyone knows what the upfront price is. However, if you're going to deal with land, there really is no upfront price, and therefore we'll follow Rav Nachman regarding land. So there's a lot of discussion about this issue for land. If you want to do more, the Yeshiva Shalom Kufayin Gimel Aleph has a nice long discussion. But but if you're a Shulchan Aruch Jew, so to speak, then you don't care because we already okayed it in the Shulchan Aruch. It's only within the Rambam that this land distinction matters. The Shulchan Aruch was okay with it even for movable items. So the Shulchan Aruch Jew, so to speak, is allowed to say, I'm going to sell with a higher price for late payment, provided that he doesn't mention the price for on-time payment following Rashi's explanation of Tarshit Rav Nachman. Good. However, implementing Rav Nachman is not as simple as saying, so I just won't mention the late price. It doesn't quite get that easy. I mean, the late price, the early price. Because what constitutes mentioning? The Maram Shik in Yeredeya Kuf Samach Dalet, it's brought in the Bris Yehuda of Beis Ha'ara Yud Aleph, Nisi B'Shalom, Kufayin Gimel, Aleph Yud Dalet. We kept you a seat here. All of them say that mentioning includes printed mentioning. It's not, the guy walks into the store and he says, I'd like to buy this on installments, wink, wink. Right? And you tell him, well, here's your late price. But he knows because there's a big sign up in the window saying what the current price is if he pays up front, or you advertise it in the newspaper, right? That's no good. Right? He walks up to you and says, I'd like to buy this car. You tell him, well, it's going to be $18,000. He says, I'd like to buy it over 3 years. Oh, you might look at this piece of paper, right, where you've conveniently printed out the late price. That doesn't work. You can't play that game. The mentioning includes in print. You communicated the information to him. That's number one. Number two, what if the buyer mentions the two prices? You say nothing. He comes into your store and he says, I'd like to buy this car from you. I know that it's $18,000 now. I'd like to pay you $30,000 in over 3 years instead. And you just say yes. That doesn't work either. Once, because your ribis is nicker. Once your ribis is visible, it's no good. Yeah. Why would you have assumed it's okay? Because you didn't say anything then. Low cuts.
No,
I wasn't cuts.
You see in the dark, if someone says something, you say amen, and then your eyes
open. That's a, first of all, it's an amen. Second, I wouldn't extrapolate from Nidharam. Nidharam are weird. It's general cloth. Sorry. What did you say? Okay. The Nesiva Shalom has the following question in Kufayin Gimel Aleph Tezayin. If the buyer asks for the price, Pesach comes into my store, and he says, I want to buy a car. Right? What will it cost me to buy this car? And I say to him, do you want to pay now, or do you want to pay over 3 years? Right? So I'm giving him the choice. So the Nesiva Shalom says that's like stating two prices. Once you tell him there's a difference between the upfront and what you pay later, that's already a problem. The Bris Yehuda disagrees. The Bris Yehuda in Chavbeza Aryeh Gimel said that's not usur. However, it's within what we call Miyos Tov Al Tikare Ra. There's a Gemara in the beginning of Brachos. It's not the beginning, it's like Lamed or so. Halfway through Brachos, fine. In which they're discussing whether you have to stop and stand when you're saying Tefillas HaDerech, or whether you can do it while you're in motion. And there's Machlokes Amoraim in that regard. I think it was Rapapa and Roshashas. And then the two Amoraim are walking on the road, and one of them stops. I think it's Rapapa who stops to say Tefillas HaDerech, and Roshashas stops as well. And Rapapa says to Roshashas, you know, why did you stop? You don't follow my view. And he said, yeah, but Mio's Tov, Al Tikare Ra. He said, if you can be good, why be bad? Meaning it doesn't cost me anything. I'm walking with you anyway. You're going to hold me up anyway. So I might as well stop and say Tefillas HaDerech. Keep in mind also, Roshashas was blind. It probably was a good idea for him to stop away from the Rebbe. That's not funny. But that's the point is, even if you don't hold that you're obligated to do something, nonetheless, there's good behavior. And that's the way the Bris Yehuda views it. The Bris Yehuda says, so this is good behavior to not ask him the question of, well, do you want to pay now or do you want to pay later? However, the Nesiva Shalom disagrees. He says no. The Nesiva Shalom's view is, in fact, that you that this is out. You can't offer those two options. What they're unsure about are cases in which the seller does not exactly tell the buyer. So one case that they ask about, this is in Bris Yehuda and Chav Beis Aryeh Gimel, Nesiva Shalom is Kufayin Gimel Aleph Tezayin. What if the buyer hears the seller tell the on-time price to a different buyer? So the question is this: I'm a buyer now, I'm not a seller, okay? Or BJ's the buyer. BJ comes into my store, and he hears me talking to Akiva. And he hears me tell Akiva that if you're going to buy this thing up front, it's $18,000, right? That's the case. Then BJ gets up to the counter. Is he allowed to choose to pay in installments? I didn't tell him anything. But he knows full well what the current price is. So it's unclear whether this is an issue or not. Since it's an avak ribis, there's no isser on the buyer. Right? The isser would be on the... There's no isser on... Right, there's no isser on the buyer. The isser would be on the lender. But the question is he setting up an inappropriate transaction because he is already aware that there's a difference between the two prices?
What's the isser then knowing the shop?
Only that it's now actually been stated. It's more clear than... I'm going to get to the knowing the shark case next.
Okay, but presumably that should be the thing. If I know the price from wherever,
right,
from around, well, that's not the same as the person
here. I understand what you're saying. The Bris Yehuda seems to be uncomfortable, but he's not going to say it's usur. He does say that if I see two buyers in the store, I can't say to Akiva, here's the upfront price, and say to BJ, here's the 3 year from now price, knowing that they're standing right there. That you can't play that game. The other question that he asks, and I'm frankly surprised that this one is unclear to him, is what if the buyer asks for an immediate price, leaves, comes back, and asks for the later price? I'm not sure why this matters. He may need a new bracha rishona, but I'm not really clear on why this should make things any better. But he's not sure if this is a problem either. I guess only because, like, you're really going to shut down commerce, he can't then ask questions. Maybe that's why. But nonetheless, the only thing that he does know you can't do in that same Ha'ara, the Bris Yehuda notes, if the buyer comes to you to buy it in installments and you start calculating interest rates out loud, He says, that's no good. That's mefarish. Even though you didn't tell him what it would have been up front, you make it very clear. So then the next question is, we've now said you're not allowed to mention early prices, and we've defined a little bit about mentioning. But what if you don't mention it at all, but the ribbis is still obvious? So the first question in this regard is, what if everybody knows what the price is now? Yatsa Hashar, going back to the to that question. We already discussed this a little bit regarding the Mitzia Samach Gimel Amid Beis, regarding the sale of wax. Right? We said you went in to buy wax. Wax is currently 4 measures for whatever the unit of wax is, for $1, and you're going to buy it, and you're going to pay up front to take delivery later, and you'll get 5 measures instead of 4. Not yet, Ruben. Like Kedai Hashav Hadelet. So, in the case in Bamatia Samach Gimel, we said that you weren't allowed to do that deal. When you're buying wax from somebody, and you're going to pay him up front in order to get 5 for $1, even though the going rate right now is 4 for $1, we said that wasn't allowed. That's the opposite of Tarsha. That's Poskin Alaperos, right? That's the case in which the buyer is the lender. He's lending money to the seller. Right, the seller gets to hold on to the money and then eventually pay you back with greater merchandise. So so there, the seller didn't mention the 2 prices. He didn't say to me, it's right now it's 4 for $1 and later it's 5 for $1. He didn't tell me that at all. And yet it's no good. So Tosos in Samach Gimel Amud Beis and the Rush in Hecha Beis resolved that that means it's prohibited because the price is known. That we saw back in Samach Gimel Amud Beis. We also saw it in the Flax case in the Rishonim. Rabbi Chiya and the Flax. I'm not going to reopen it, but it was the same idea there. Where it's Yatsa Hashar, if everybody knows what the price is, you can't say, well, I didn't tell them. Right? Yeah.
So what happens if you have these scenarios where you have a sale? I mean, the mother, let's say you already run a lot of scenario plans, where you have a sale, it's cash here, buy it today, there's a discount.
Right.
Normally it's $100, and normally, cash, right?
We're getting to that. We're getting to that. We have to talk discounts.
Yeah. It's a real laugh.
Oh, it's very real laugh. I can't believe I just said Zach. It's a real thing, yes. It does happen. We do have to talk discounts. Sorry. If you say so. But if the price is known, it seems like it is indeed a problem. And and according to Tosfos, it's even where there is no formal price, like Yatsa Hashar, but everybody knows what the price is. Yatsa Hashar, we've just spent all year discussing Yatsa Hashar, is where there's a set price in the market and people are not supposed to deviate from it. But even without that, if people know what the price is, nonetheless, it's still a problem. And this is what we talked about back in Tosfos when he used the term that you've been waiting for, shumaso yidua. The general value of the thing is known, was what Tosfos said. That's already going to be a problem, and that term is used in the Tur here, as well as in the Beis Yosef. However, the Chavos Das says not so fast. The Chavos Das on your sheet is source Lamed Beis. He says, Yesh chiluk bein davar sheshumaso yadua lachol ha'olam kimo dagan v'chitin shechon lishol kol adam kama hashar bein tzich leroz ha'davar uklal. He says, there's a difference between shumaso yadua. Shumaso yadua means that people generally know what it's worth. So the difference between that, he says, for example, if you're dealing with grain, you're dealing with wheat, where anybody can ask anybody else, what does this cost? And everybody knows, even if they don't have the item in front of them. There's no difference between this bushel and that bushel. It doesn't make a difference. As opposed to something where the value of this thing is not known, like animals, right? I mean, when last time I went to buy a cow, I didn't just say, well, the price is $1,000, and so I'm buying that cow. I wanted to look at the animal. Does it look healthy? Does it look content? Does it, there are things you have to know about cows. I don't know how many people here have bought cows. But the reality is, each one is unique. Sheyesh lahen shar. There is a going rate. However, you have to see whether this one is like the others. The shar is set for the normal case, but there's a variation in product. the products aren't all manufactured to spec. That's the idea. Similar types of merchandise, not just animals. You can't tell someone what the price is without actually seeing it. So therefore the ribbis is not really set. So in other words, you have two different views. One view is that as long as people know what the price is, it's already considered light cuts. The other view is it depends. There are certain types of merchandise that's uniform. And whatever you're going to pay for this one is the same as you're going to pay for that one. But there are other types of merchandise where there's a variation. And if there's variation, then all bets are off. The Shulchan Aruch brings the view that if there is a known price, it is like cuts. The Shulchan Aruch Harav adds an interesting twist on this. If you take a look at Source Lamed Gimel, he says, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, first Lubavitcher Rebbe, that's why he says that. Afilu davar she'en lo shar b'shuk, ela she'shumaso yadua. Even if something does not have a going rate in the market, but its price is known, yadua l'kol, everybody knows the price. Kimo pilpel, right? The falafel, no, he's peppers. The oshav or wax. Shekola pilpelin v'hashav v'shavin, where all peppers and all wax are the same. V'akol konenosim tadir, and everybody buys them all the time. V'yodim shumasam, such that, therefore, they know what they're worth. So he adds a level here. It isn't just that there's a known rate, but people buy them all the time, and therefore everybody's familiar with the known rate. V'zeh machab yosem mishumasam, you do what you're going to sell for more than that. So that adds a twist to this. It's not just the issue of, is there a price that people know, but is it a price that everybody knows, because they're forever buying them.
That's what is the difference? When a man buys something very expensive, they usually go to at the stores or the internet. I know the usually the price. And even though I usually don't buy every day.
Right. But the thing is, when you go to other stores, that doesn't tell you the price in this store unless there is a shahr. Meaning most of our products, as we discussed when we did Onah, have a level of variation. You know, I want to buy headphones. So I walk into Best Buy, and I see that they're $30. I walk into, you know, the airport, and there's a little thing there, and there it's going to be $50. I walk into some other place, it's going to be $40. So there's a range of what is the price. We're going to talk about, momentarily, what if I go way out of the zone? So it's very clear that this is ribbis. But otherwise, there's some level. I can't say that it's shahr yadua just because I can check on the stores.
For example, if you're going to buy a car, I don't know, in Israel, you have a special Shlomo 6, they have a special table that you can know exactly what is the prices.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to buy a gun, I don't care, but if you're going to buy a car, it's expensive in Israel, then I'm going to check it before. Even though usually, I don't know the price. I don't understand why it's better that I buy every day or every week or all the time. If it's very expensive, I'm going to check it before you do it.
No, I think that buying it all the time means that you're going to have a natural familiarity with the price, and it's going to be the same price everywhere, as opposed to something that I'm going to buy once, which even if I check all over the place, I don't know his price for it. I think there's a leveling element that comes about. Yeah, yesh kaza shivyon, kshekonim davar tadir, shekulam mochrim v'oto rama.
If we're going to, one of the things we discussed in Onah is that perhaps shahr doesn't exist today because today the onus of discovering the price is really on the buyer.
Right.
So if the goal here is to allow commerce to function normally, if I'm going to buy something, I will try and find out every possible piece of information about the price, about the deals, about whatever I can find out. So if you're telling me that when I actually go to buy this, the buyer, the seller, you know, has to be in such a way that I never find out what the original price, the ticket price of this thing is. I can only do it.
It's not that I never find out. It's that the seller, I think this goes back to his question about all the sort of variations on what constitutes mentioning the price. is that the seller can't be saying it, and it can't be obvious to you. It doesn't mean that it's impossible to find it out.
I mean, but let's say there wasn't, say I found out online, I found out from someone, right? I found out what the price was, and I went into the store. It sounds like that would be problematic if they had an ad, they had some way of me finding out the price, and then I walk into the store, which is very likely.
Yeah.
That I'm going to go buy a car.
And then we said that's called cuts.
But so if the goal here is to limit... if the goal is to allow commerce to function normally, doesn't that put a serious damper on the way people buy things today?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's what Ribis is. Meaning, I think that while we're trying to minimize the impact of it, there's a limit to what you can do. Because at the end of the day, you're telling the world, it's this price if you pay me now, and it's that price if you pay me later. So that we have to avoid. There's a limit to how far the Rashba is willing to bend. One thing that's a very interesting question that I saw on this that I thought was fascinating. When we dealt with issues of Onah, we distinguished between different sharim, different levels of prices. And we said, it's one thing to say there's a national market and a national going rate. Right? So there's the same price everywhere. And we said that's fairly fixed and steady and stable. And then we identify what we call Shuk Shel Ayaros, where the city, the town, has a particular shahr, but because it's a small market, it's just local, it'll fluctuate. It's vulnerable to change. The Medina, and then there are the cities. So we discussed it not only in Onah, we discussed it in Sa'ab Bisa'ab. Right, when we dealt with the issue of trading a commodity lending someone a commodity and getting a commodity back later on, and we said there that I'm allowed to lend you a bag of flour and get a bag of flour back from you if there's a set price. But then we asked, well, what if in this town there's a set price? Or maybe they're selling flour for a set price on Bathurst. But if I were to go over to Bayview, they're going to be selling it at a different price. Maybe these prices are more vulnerable to fluctuation. It doesn't really count as a set price. Now there, if you have a shahr, it's a good thing. That allows you to lend it allows me to lend you the bag of flour and get back a bag of flour from you because it's a set price. It's a good thing to have a set price. Here, on the other hand, having a set price is going to be machmir. If there's a set price, then I consider it like cuts. Like everybody's already been informed. It's a bad thing. So the question is, do you accept Shuk Shel Ayaros or not? The Nesiva Shalom and Kufayin Gimel Aleph Test Yud Beis discusses this question. You want to say Safek Drabbanan LaHakel, right? Safek Drabbanan LaKula. It's down, it's a rabbinic issue, so it's Bimekil. But that will lead you to say that when it came to Sa'ab B'Sa'ah, we accepted the Shahr Shel Ayaros, because it was a Kula. And when it comes to this issue, to installment payments, we will not accept the Shahr Shel Ayaros. You have to contradict yourself. You accept it sometimes, you don't accept it at other times. However, he says, here you could argue that the fundamental issue involved is the visibility of the ribbis. How obvious is it that ribbis is going on? That's really what we're asking here. And so you can resolve the question logically. You could argue that Shahr Shebashuk Shel Ayarot is already visible. Having a shahr in this town, I don't care about the fluctuation. The point is, once there is a going rate right here, it already is considered to be visible. However, the Beis Yosef quotes the Rashba, which I brought you on your sheet, I think, in Source Lamed Daled, in which he said, "Kol shahr shadarko liyimasheich harei shahr katsuf." As long as it's going to last, which we said the Shahr Shel Ayaros is not going to do. He said the key is whether it is ongoing. So, logically, I might have argued that even a local shahr that's vulnerable to fluctuation, shahr is the known rate. So even a local shahr, a local known rate, would be sufficient to say it's therefore cuts. He now knows the price. However, the Rashba specifically says, if it's floating, if it's fluctuating, then it's not. The local price doesn't create a problem. It's only if it's a more national price that it creates a problem. So what we've said, again, make sure we know what we're talking about. What we said is, mentioning something is very broad, and you can get into trouble even without telling the guy straight out, yeah, this is ribbis. I would charge you 18 today, 30,000 in 3 years. That's number one. Number two, we said if everybody knows what the price is at this point, that's considered cuts with some variation in terms of what constitutes knowing what the price is. What if it's a less commonly purchased item? What if it's a local shahr? Fine. What if, and this is the last point in this, what if you charge so much for the latter price that it's clear that it's above what he would pay now? Yaron talked about going from store to store to store and pricing it up. So let's say I find out the going rate for this car is basically in the range of 17 to 20. I went to a bunch of Honda dealerships. I found out the going rate is 17 to 20 for me to buy it up front. I go into the last Honda dealership and I say to him, I want to buy this car and I want to pay you over 5 years. What is it going to cost me? And he says, it's going to cost you $30,000. He did not tell me the upfront price. He didn't ask me, do you want to pay today or later? But on the other hand, it's so far above what the going rate is right now. The going rate is 17 to 20. He's charging me 30, right? It's clear that this is over and above. It's clear that there is ribbis. So Ramban writes, and I brought it for you on the sheet, I think. I thought I brought it for you on the sheet, but I'm not seeing it here. What did I do? That's odd. Alright, I thought I brought you in the Ramban, but I don't see it, so I guess I didn't. Ramban says that even according to Rashi, who permits naming a later price, who says you can just say in 3 years it's this, without telling what it would have been up front, that's only if it's the normal price. I think it's just because it's in the Ramban that I brought you earlier on the sheet, so I must not have brought it again, but it's alright. He says that's only if it's at the normal level, not if it's elevated. That's the position of the Ramban, Sefer HaTrumos, and the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch bring it. I think that must be what I did. I brought you the Torah in Lamed Hey. In Ma'alehu Harbe, if you increase the price a lot, at Shenigur Lakol, Shebishvil Amtanas Mos, Ma'alehu, so that everybody can tell that you're charging him 30 because he's paying you later, Havaleki Mefarish. So that's clearly a case of Mefarish. That's the Torah of the Shulchan Aruch in the beginning of Kufayin Gimel. That's the idea. What is a lot, though? I gave you a case where the going rate is 17 to 20, and he charges me 30. What if he charges me 21?
Sorry.
Well, potentially, yes. I mean, it's two different areas, but potentially, yes. And it's actually going to be relevant in about 30 seconds. So the question is, how do you define a lot? So the Shahr Deya quotes the Maharal Bach from the Smag. He says that it is, I'm about 30 seconds now, the Shir Onah. He says what counts as a lot is the Shir Onah. For those who are here at the beginning of the year, Onah is 1/6. So if the normal price is $83 and I charge you $100, the reason is because that's the threshold for overcharging. At that point, if the going rate is $83 and I charge you $101, you have the right to walk into Beis Din and say, he overcharged me and get the whole deal voided. That's the way it works. So the Shahr Deya says, that's your threshold. Is the Shir or not? I wrote it for you in Lamed Vav, Kishamosiv Yosir. You see what I bolded there? That's what we call ma'aleyu harbe, that you've gone over the price too much, and it's obvious that this is ribis va'asr, and you won't be allowed to do it. That's the Shahr Deya's position. However, when you go back into reading the Smag, it's less clear. The Shahr Deya is quoting the Smag, right? You see, Shuas Maral Bach, citing the Smag. But read the Smag, because that's not what he said in Lamed Zayin. The Smag says, Vafilu v'stam shematir Rav Nachman eino matir ela v'davar she'in dam of yiduin. Even when Rav Nachman permits, he's only talking about if the price is not known. And dot dot dot. Kigon, actually not dot dot dot. Kigon, chevet hanimker b'chamesh lakol u'mocharo l'shana b'sheish. Like where it's worth five, but you say I'm selling it to you in a year's time for six. Shein zed domalager, not that fine. He says that would be your max. That's the Shir Onah, right? That's what the Maral Bach was quoting, what the Shahr Deya was quoting. It's worth five, I'm selling it to you for six. That will be that case. However, but then look at his other end. Avol shava chamesh be'eser. But if he sells you something worth five, for ten, hayamodi da asur. Afilu b'stam, then it's asur, even if you don't tell him what the price is. You follow? What the Smag actually said was an example of where you're okay is if everybody knows the price is five, and I'm going to charge him six. An example of what's not okay is if everybody knows the price is 5 and I charge him 10. There's an awful large gap in between. I don't know if shir or na'ah is really the smag's standard. There's more of a gap here. So the Bris Yehuda in Chav Beis Ha'ara Tezvav quotes the Sma, saying that it's actually the small amount the price goes up when bandits come to a city. When bandits come to a city, there's a level of inflation. I don't know if you've seen this happen in your, you know, travels. But there's a little bit of inflation. People are afraid, like when there's a hurricane coming. Right? There's a hurricane coming, everybody goes to the store, and they're willing to pay a little bit more. So that's what counts. The point is that it has to go up enough that everybody knows that the reason why it went up is because you're paying late. You can't ascribe it to some other cause. So once it goes up more than normal fluctuation, that's it. You know, tell me, well, I'd like to have a percentage, I'd like to have a fixed number. The answer is you can't. There is no fixed number. This is much more just, you know, what you sense. You know, it's a sense of it. Yeah.
Cases in the Gemara, are they talking about that? Presumably, the
you know, let me just do. I have one last point in implementing Rav Nachman, and then I'll come back to it. But I just want to finish Rav Nachman. And we're not going to hit Rav Chama this week. That's clear. But let me at least do that. We're very surprised. The Chavos Da'as says that where the buyer asks for an immediate price, the Chavos Da'as is in Lamed Ches. Whatever the guy walks into the store and he asks for an immediate price, and then he asks for a delayed price. Take a look. In Baliknos, Vesavra Mocher Shuvim Mizuman Ba'ar Ba'asara. Guy comes in and says, "I want to buy something." The seller thinks that he wants to pay right now and says, okay, the price is 10. And then the buyer says, no, actually, I wanted to buy it on credit. Pay later. Yochel HaMocher Lomar, the seller can say, you know what? I back out of my offer of 10, and now you're going to have to pay 12. But the offer of 10 is off the table. It's not you can pay $10 right now or you can pay $12 later. Even if you pay up front, you pull out your wallet and say, here I'm paying, it's still going to be $12. So the Chavos Da'as asks, what's the rule then? Right? Are you allowed to do that? So the... Forget Ona. Leave out Ona as a discussion because right now we're dealing with Ribbis. It's a good question, but not for right now. So... he seems to think, you know what, maybe this is okay. The Nesiva Shalom is skeptical. In Kufayin Gimel Aleph Yud Zayin, he's skeptical about whether you can do it. I just thought that was a very interesting question that he was asking. You took the price off the table, but are you really taking the price off the table? The next person to walk in your store isn't going to be charged 12, he's going to be charged 10. But the other question is the discount question. They say to me, if you pay your tuition over a year, it's going to be $25,000. However, if you pay up front, it'll be $20,000. Is that okay? You framed it as a discount. You're saying the normal price is the 25. It's not ribbis. The normal price is 25. But if you pay up front, we would like to give you a discount. So the Chachmas Adam says, that's fine. In Source Lamed Tes, Venerally he says, if the price in the stores everywhere really is 12, but this particular seller needs cash now. So he says, if you want to pay me b'mezuman, you want to pay me cash up front, I'll sell it to you for 10. That's the reverse of ribbis. I'm giving you a break. Because you're paying up front. That's fine, because you're getting the goods up front. If you weren't getting the goods up front, this would be posei galaperos. Right? Now you are lending the seller money, and he's giving you back more goods later. That's buying the wax, paying him 4 for a dollar, and getting 5 for a dollar because you waited. But that's not what's going on. You got the goods right now.
Well, it makes it a bit complicated with tuition, because you're not. You're
right. The tuition case may not be a good example, unless you're going to say that tuition buys you the right to enter school on day one. You get a pass to come into school on day one, so maybe you could make the argument that you're paying everything up front. It would have to go with the Yeshua skills and Tchilev. That's open whether you apply that to tuition and so on. Right, correct. But the point is, the Chachmas Adam says discounts are fine. The Mishnah Lamelech disagrees. The Mishnah Lamelech on Ches Aleph in Source Mem disagrees and says it's not true. They saying it outside, he says the bottom line is you add price for waiting. That's the bottom line. It's true, you're giving him a discount to do it now, but if you were paying you later, you would be increasing the price in order to get paid later. He says it's ribbis. He actually thinks it's ribbis, like real ribbis. The Shulchan Aruch Harav is less angry, but he also doesn't accept it because he says it looks like ribbis. Meaning, Nira, if you look at the end of Source of Aleph, Nira kenot al sachar be'ad hamtanas chov shnischayev lo kishkanu mimenu. It looks like you are getting paid for waiting when you buy it in installments in this case. So the Shulchan Aruch Harav doesn't like it either. And the Yad Avraham, bless you, the Yad Avraham is quoted in the Siva Shalom. In Source Membeis, of the Sefer Yad Avraham Kasav, Davi Gizera, Shemayatu, Likach Rabacham, Avuram Tanaz Maus. The Yad Avraham gives you another reason not to do it. He says, if you're going to allow installments, I'm not going to, if you're going to allow an upfront discount, the people who work in an institution, the people who sell the cars or whatever it is, aren't up on the ins and outs of ribbis. If you tell them that you're allowed to give a discount for early payment, they're not going to recognize the difference between that and charging a higher price for late payments. They're not up on the subtleties of why this is okay. And therefore, he says, you're not supposed to do the letter of the law, it fits. But the upfront discount is just too much trouble. It's gzeirah. That's exactly what he says. That was the wording, right? Gzeirah, in Membeis. So those are just the last points on Rav Nachman, and that's really what we're going to have to stop with. I'll take your question though. But when it comes to this business of wanting to keep the ribbis blurry, the rules themselves are blurry. Like the case where the buyer says, "I want to pay you later," and you say to him, "Okay, but it's the same price now, whether later or up front." Line is blurry in that case, and blurry where you're going to do discounts as well. Adam?
In terms of the fluctuation, the possible fluctuation of the price here,
yeah.
The cases in the Gemara much more that something that someone would notice changing, whatever, the difference between the production value and the value when you sell it much later.
Sorry, say that again.
One of the possibilities here in terms of the fluctuation of price is that it has to be just under the amount that someone would notice that it's not the normal price. But clearly in the Gemara, we're talking about the price of wheat when it's harvested and the price of wheat in the shuk later. And assuming it's a much bigger difference, people notice the difference between the price now and the price that you pay later.
Correct.
And that's considered okay. That's the classic example of tarsha. So how can you say that the upper limit is when people realize that there's,
in other words, why are we okay in the Gemara with the Rosh Hashanah?
The example of the Gemara seems to be...
Why isn't that in and of itself a violation of lokatz? Because presumably everybody knows what that increase is.
So obviously, how are we going to define this change? It's not that way. It's some other way.
I'm not sure that that's true. In other words, the price of wheat in the beginning of the season... Right, is whatever it is because he says I like having cash up front. Right? So he's gonna charge you $100 in the beginning of the season. If you wait until when wheat actually comes out, he's gonna charge you $150. Right? That's your distinction. But maybe the answer really is that even in the beginning of the season, if they get worse, this happens to lulavim every few years. Right? Egypt is not producing lulavim. Egypt is angry and they're not going to make lulavim, or they had a locust plague or whatever it was, and now there are no lulavim. So even people who want to pay in advance for their lulav are going to have to pay a jacked up price, not because of ribbis, but because things fluctuate. But that's the thing, that's what he's saying. If there's another way to excuse the difference between normal price and what I'm charging now, without it being because it's delayed payment. Any other normal way. I think any other normal way.
Locust plague is not a...
No, the fear of shortage is what we're talking about with the sarin.
Okay. I mean, but then you could always say that. Oh, there must be a shortage.
I hear that. I'm sorry that I have to run out, but I have to pick up my son in time for a dentist appointment. But thank you, and we'll be kept next week, God willing. Have a good Shabbos.